Welcome to the first episode of Howick History, new feature here on times.co.nz. Thank you for tuning in the inaugural episode. I'm Jim Birchall. I'm a journalist here at the Times, and I'm thrilled today to have in the studio, as we will for the majority of these podcasts, Alan LaRoche, who is a well-known local historian here in Howick, and basically wrote the book on Howick, Pakuranga, and beyond. He knows just about everything there is to know about East Auckland. Looking in today, Alan, how are you?
Hi, Jim.
No worries. We're going to go right back to the start for people who are relatively new to Howick like me. I'm sure they've got some sort of idea that it's a historic part of Auckland. You know, you can tell that just by the buildings you see around and the infrastructure and things like that. As I said, you've your main book on the subject is Gray's Folly, is that correct? And followed up by a history of Howick, Pakuranga, Beachlands, eastern areas, East Tamaki, Woodford, so forth. Okay. How many books have you authored in total, Al?
Oh, about six.
Six books. Okay, so that's kept you busy. It has.
When we're talking about history, pre-Maori history, we've got a lot of evidence of the pre-Maori history around Howick.
I saw you make a comment on an article, you had an opinion piece a few months ago just on Howick history and so forth, and you mentioned that I think Maori had been settled in the area for about 1,000 years, which seemed to contradict the sort of 750 years.
They're two separate groups.
Okay, let's talk through that.
Now, if you are coming from Polynesia and you'd seen the birds coming down in this way.
Yep.
You probably realise that there's probably land down here.
Sure.
And there are other bits of evidence that they could see when they're out at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And they could see godwits, they could see other birds coming down here. So when they came here, they would come to the warmest and most attractive areas to settle.
Mm-hmm.
So they settled at Motutapu, Motuwehi, and of course Howick Beach, but it was sheltered waters.
Yep.
And there were lots and lots of shellfish around here, and the sea was abundant, fish in the sea.
Yep.
There was good food in the valleys around the area.
Fertile volcanic soils around
here,
isn't
it? Very fertile initially. And there were Maori here.
Yep.
We have one chap at Clevedon who I know. He uncovered 40 Moa bones, 40 skeletons.
That was in a swamp in Clevedon, wasn't it?
Correct.
As I recall reading somewhere.
And the Moa hadn't been just caught. They'd been burnt, cooked, and eaten.
Oh, okay.
By guess
who? So it's sort of a prehistoric KFC bone sort of just flung on the ground there.
And Moa, of course, being relatively easy to catch.
Yeah.
They were...
Well, that was their downfall, wasn't it? Because they were so easy to catch.
Right.
Big and cumbersome and didn't fly.
And I've picked up Moa crop bones down here.
Is that right?
In the streets of Howick.
Yep.
We have a collection in the historical village of bones that we found in the East Tamaki caves.
Yep.
Because the archaeologists, when they've done their work, sometimes they give it to people like me and our museum. We have bones of Moa on Browns Island, Motukoria.
Was that right?
So, they were abundant.
You got to wonder how they got over to Browns Island.
Absolutely.
unless they had a land bridge,
They don't swim.
Yeah, well, that's right.
But they'd been there for a long while.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And erosion had created the channel
between
the mainland and those islands.
Okay. All right, so the Maori settlement, approximating, was around...
About a thousand years ago. We have Maori in this area that claim to be descended from Maori.
Was that right? Big claims, like saying I'm descended from William Wallace. I've been told that my whole life, you see.
Have you?
Yes.
Well, it's something to be
proud of. I'm sure a lot of Scotsmen probably have,
And Maori came down here. He basically discovered New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Went back and told his relations, and then because they were overcrowded in the Polynesian islands, Hawaiki, they came down here.
Okay, so Hawaiki is sort of their ancestral homeland, isn't it? It's sort of, is it up around the northern Pacific?
No, it means a place far away.
A place far away, okay.
Not quite certain.
That would have narrowed it down in those days, wouldn't it?
No.
Everything would have been
far
away.
We know that the Tainui, stopped at Rangiatia, mm-hmm. Cook Island group.
Yep.
And before it came down here.
Okay.
But it had come from places unknown, as you might say.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And European settlement came, correct me if I'm wrong, around the 1820s, 30s, around
the
there?
The first missionaries,
yep.
After all, Cook came here in the late 1700s, and others followed very soon after.
Any evidence for, pioneers or like Cook coming to the Howick region?
No.
No.
He kept outside the Hauraki Gulf.
Okay.
So he didn't...
So he went around the coast.
He didn't look at Auckland Harbour and the Hauraki Gulf.
No. Really. What was the reason for that?
Oh, weather.
Yep.
You know, he was mapping the New Zealand.
Yep. I suppose if you're doing your topography, you've got to stick to the outer limits, so to speak, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Sorry, keep going. So it was after Cook then.
So Nauri came down here.
Yeah.
And Howick was a lovely place to come to.
Sure.
As many immigrants who followed.
Yeah.
Because there was plenty of food, it was a safe... And those early Maori were hunters-gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't build pā. It was a later immigration group that, roughly 800 years ago, those people arrived here. And because the numbers started to increase, they needed to protect their crops,
mm-hmm.
particularly kumara and others. And so they needed to build fortified villages.
Sure.
Or pā.
Or pā, yeah. Okay, excellent. And what was the name? Sorry, it was Ngā Tai, wasn't it? Was the
Ngā Tai are the tangata whenua, the people of this area, and they're one of the oldest iwi in the Auckland region.
Okay, but they're the original inhabitants of the area. Okay, no worries. But I understand one of the main features of Howick is a place called Stockade Hill, which was a military reserve. But later
never
on, wasn't
a Maori
it?
Lookout
that, that's
or,
right.
Or,
yeah.
Or they lived at Mervale Reserve because they needed to watch the main road, which was the
sort of Bleak House, isn't it? They're getting
off Bleak House Road.
Sure.
And they could see the whole of the Auckland Harbour. They could see the Tamaki River.
Yeah.
So they could see people coming and going,
mm-hmm.
and to see whether they're friendly or not.
Okay.
And so they lived there. And they didn't, with no evidence that they lived on Stockade Hill.
So Stockade Hill obviously had some, military applications and so forth later on. So there was a European or colonisation.
1863 is when the stockade was built in July 1863.
Was that because the land wars were underway then? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
The land wars should never have happened.
No.
It was based on a rumour that George Grey had
Now, he was a governor at the time,
wasn't
he?
He was governor.
Yep.
He was knighted in 1848,
mm-hmm.
And he could see the Maori of the Waikato, Tainui people,
mm-hmm.
With excellent crops down there,
mm-hmm.
fertile land.
Yep.
They were starting to get a little bit powerful for Governor Grey.
Okay.
They were trading well. They did a lot. They built their own trading vessels.
But they did they get to the point where they're like, why are we doing this to help the British colonise, and we could take this technology and use it for ourselves?
Well, if the British had been just a little bit more friendly.
Okay, that was part of the issue.
They like to be boss.
And they've got a bit of a history of that, haven't they? So.
Of dominating the indigenous people.
Sure.
They were used to that around the world.
Yep.
Look at Australia.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, Australia's never really recovered from that, haven't they?
That's right.
I mean, they were treated like dirt.
It's about time they recognised...
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things with New Zealand, we're unique in our treatment of indigenous peoples. Obviously, there's some people who say there was a genocide in the country, but evidence for that is fairly scratchy, isn't it? But in terms of colonisation, every country's had its, problems with that, and wars have resulted in, as you're saying, the land wars should never have happened in New Zealand. But I think in the main... Indigenous people, the Maori, have assimilated pretty well.
Extremely well.
Maori, compared with Australian Aboriginals.
Were well organised.
Yep.
They had their territories organised. They had a language that, and they had a structure that was to be admired.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we haven't mentioned is that after Cook had gone around New Zealand, he produced maps, and people in Europe looked at those maps, and they could see that there were seals and whales down here.
Sure.
And Germany, and we know that France had interests in New Zealand, but there were other countries like Germany and Russia were interested in coming down here and possibly taking over New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And some of the British realised that. So they needed to push forward and get the Treaty of Waitangi organised with the so-called cooperation and approval of Māori.
How long was Hauck and surrounding districts inhabited by the British before the treaty in 1840 was signed?
Very little.
Very little?
Yes.
Okay.
We had a...
What were their main points of concentration? So up north to Russell, I suppose?
Correct.
Because that was the original capital of New Zealand, wasn't it? Okay. So there wasn't much happening in this region apart from...
In 1843, they surveyed the whole of this area, Hauck and Pakaranga.
Mm-hmm.
And some people came and they started farming in Pakaranga.
Mm-hmm. What were they farming? And what were they growing?
Oh, they were growing oats particularly.
Oh, is that right?
A certain amount of wheat,
mm-hmm,
and other crops like barley. But okay. Oats was the main crop because when you need chaff to feed your horses, you need a lot of oats.
Sure.
And they also ground up the oats to make oatmeal, etc.
Sure. So Hauck sort of popped up as kind of a service town to these farms, these agricultural areas.
It was empty, and there lies another story.
Okay.
Because in 1836,
mm-hmm,
the Māori of this area, Ngāi Tairiti, Irirangi, and several others,
mm-hmm,
met with the Māori of the Thames and Hauraki area, mm-hmm, and Te Whiriwhiri from Waikato came up.
Sure.
And they were actually sick and tired of killing each other.
Okay. Fair enough, too.
It was the end of the musket war period.
Yep.
And so they said, look, we need a European,
mm-hmm,
a missionary preferably, to live in this area and produce peace.
Okay.
So they...
As kind of a mediator between the tribes, or...?
Right, yes. Yep. And they asked Henry Williams.
Okay.
And he met them at Otahuhu,
mm-hmm,
in 1836.
Yep.
And there was an agreement between all the Māori tribes. And it wasn't a easy agreement because, they were giving up a certain amount.
Yeah.
And so William Fairbairn, who was the longest-serving missionary in the Church Missionary Society that Williams was responsible for.
Now, these were Anglican missionaries?
Anglicans from Paihia and the Farnworth. Okay. And they were asked to come down here and mediate and to take over this block, which we call it the Fairbairn Block.
Sure.
And so Fairbairn had the job as the peacemaker. He didn't own the land, but he was to look after it on behalf of Māori.
Okay.
He set up a mission station at what we nowadays call Omana, near Maraetai Beach.
Sure, I know it, yep.
And over 1,000 Māori were educated to read and write and use European clothing.
Is that right?
They were brought up by Fairbairn, his wife and daughter.
Okay. Were they the original missionaries in the area, or was he just one that was...
He
got on well with everybody and he was seen as a good negotiator.
They all spoke Māori fluently. Yep. They got on well with Māori. He was actually a carpenter, or originally he was a wheelwright.
Okay.
And he offered his services to Marsden, and in 1814 he came across to the Bay of Islands.
Was that Samuel Marsden?
Yes, correct. Sure. Reverend Samuel Marsden.
Yeah.
And he worked up there in the mission station at Paihia in the far north.
Yep.
And as I say, he later moved down here.
Okay, excellent.
And of course, with the Treaty of Waitangi, all old land claims, as they were called, old land claims were reconsidered by some commissioners,
mm-hmm,
and they decided that they didn't like missionaries taking over Maori land.
Okay.
And so Fairbairn was left with roughly 5,000 acres.
Okay.
Most
of it, where was that approximately?
Most of it was at Otahuhu.
Yep.
Some of it was in Pakaranga.
Okay.
And at that time, they told the Maori that they would be given a reserve at Umapuia and they're all to go and live there.
Okay.
That was cruel.
Mm.
No, this was their land.
Sure.
And the government took it and never paid for it.
No.
We have had a treaty claim just a couple of years ago, and Ngāi Tahi have been given some compensation, not very much. Of course, Ngāi Tahi nowadays own McLean's College.
Sure, yeah.
They get rent.
Yeah.
So they should.
Yeah.
It's government-owned land. Yeah. But the real problem there was...
So was it confiscated, in your opinion, or was it just...
It was never paid for.
It was just never paid for, okay.
It's just as bad.
It is just as bad, yes. And why didn't they pay for it? Because they thought they didn't have to? Or
they thought that they should get away with it. Okay. But in Māori tikanga,
yeah,
if you look after land on behalf of Māori, when the reason for you taking over that land is completed, you give it back.
Sure.
And Fairbairn wanted to give it back. It's been a pretty sore point for Ngāi Tahi for a long while.
For a long time. And they made a treaty claim in the past few years, did they? Yes, or they the did. Settlement was in the they past did. Few years? Because that can take some time, can't they?
And Ngāi Tahi are a relatively small iwi today.
Sure, yeah. I actually had to look them up because I didn't even know. I didn't know enough about them or much about them at all.
And, of course, we've got Ngāti Pāra on the other side of yep. the Taitmiki River. And there they have territories east of Auckland, Wakatiwai, and Waiheke.
Now, there's a Māori pā... it's just over the Pāmua Bridge, isn't there? What's
Makoia.
It? Makoia.
Which is being demolished at the moment.
I saw that because of the new Auckland Transport's new bridge.
I've kept an eye on that
and
watched what they're doing. They did have...
They must be retaining some of the cultural significance, though, of it. Or not. Am I completely off there?
I wish they were.
Yeah.
But no, they're having to bulldoze that part. Now, that part is particularly important for Ngāti Pāra.
Okay.
Because Hongi Ika came through in 1821, and we think probably about 3,000 to 4,000 Maori were slaughtered.
Was that right?
No, on that far side.
Okay.
Hongi Ika had guns.
Yeah.
And Ngāti Pāra had very few.
So he had a strategic advantage from the start.
He went to England, Ngāti Pāra. Hongi Ika went to England.
Yeah.
He was entertained by the rich and famous in Britain.
As a novelty or a curiosity?
He spent time at the university there studying Roman fortifications.
Oh, is that right?
He knew how to use all their techniques.
Yeah.
As well as he sold all his gifts and bought muskets.
Okay. So he was a bit of a businessman as well.
Oh, too right.
He was an arms dealer of sorts, you could say. How do you actually access that part of interest? The Makoia, is it?
Makoia Pa is only part of the Potoka Pa because Moanina was the village,
yep.
which is basically King's Road of today, going yep. back towards the Pāmua Basin.
Okay. I've always, because I've heard about it, but I've never actually seen it physically, you know.
It was a beautiful pa. We've got photographs of it.
Oh, is that right?
Before they started work on it. And I went down when they were doing the present Pāmua Bridge,
mm-hmm.
and they cut through the bank there, and you could see the ditches, and the two sorts of ditches there. The earlier ones that were made for hand weapons,
mm-hmm.
and the others that were on top of that was for musket fire.
Okay.
And
you said he'd obviously studied Roman engineering or warfare. Or okay. And
he built towers there so that he could lob rocks.
And have the higher ground, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?
A few escaped by swimming the Tāmaki River.
Okay. But the majority of them was just a big slaughter, was it?
It was a slaughter.
Okay. Yes. Similar thing happened out at Karakare Beach, didn't it, out in West Auckland. They all got smoked out when they went up into the cliffs, didn't they?
That's right.
Was that a tactic of the day to smoke them out?
Well, there were many ways of attacking the enemy.
Okay. So is the area of Makoia Pā, is that considered tapu or sacred? Or, is there a rahui over it?
They've had council archaeologists working there for 9 months or more.
Oh, is that right?
And they've had a resident Ngāti Pāra Māori who was keep an eye on it, mainly to look for body parts.
Yep.
And they found a few.
Yep.
But it was in that dig.
It kind of sounds like a place time's forgotten almost in a way, because I just haven't heard anything of it. You know, if you're going to build on top of obviously an Indigenous graveyard or something like that, that's sort of bad news these days, you know, and there'd be a lot of red tape in your way. But obviously that happened before sort of we were legislated like we are today.
I'm not sure what sort of compensation Auckland Council have made with Ngāti Poa. I know they were offering them land at Glen Innes.
Yep.
They weren't particularly happy with that.
Yep.
They need...
Would they have rather had the land at St Heliers or something, would they?
Possibly.
So would I, to be fair. Alan, I just want to touch on the Fencibles. Well, they're number one name in Howick, aren't they? You know, their name's everywhere, Fencible this, Fencible that.
Pioneer settlers.
There's a football club even named the Fencibles just down the road from us here. Who were they? Why did they come to New Zealand and what's their legacy been?
The Fencibles were soldier settlers. They were army pensioners who'd served in the British Army in places like Afghanistan, China, India.
Yep.
Well over half of our people had served in India. And they had spent 20 years serving in the British Army.
Okay.
Generally, you would join the army when you're relatively young.
So they were also around the 40 mark, these guys?
They were 40. They weren't allowed to be over 48 years of age.
Yep.
And they had to be at least 5'6" in height. Okay. About an average height.
Sure, in those times, yeah.
But you see, in the British Army, only 6 per regiment, 6 per 100, mm-hmm. were allowed to have a wife.
Is that right?
And so when they retired after their 20 years in the army, these men were released. We've got their discharge papers in the Howick Historical Village.
Is that right?
And the most common reason for discharge was worn out at 40. No further use to the army.
Is that right? Worn out.
Absolutely.
Jeez.
So they looked around for a wife.
Yeah.
And many of the wives were 13 and 14 years of age.
Okay.
Remembering they were... You know,
yep.
40s, early 40s
yep.
in age. So a lot of the women were a lot younger.
Sure.
And only 6 per regiment were allowed to marry. So there was a lot of them married. Now, some of our...
What was the reasoning behind that, 6 per regiment? Just seems like an arbitrary
You don't
figure.
Want too many women around the barracks.
Okay.
You need some to do the cleaning, the cooking and other work. But children were a nuisance to the army.
Yeah.
They might have to look after them.
Yeah.
So they didn't want children around the army.
Okay.
At that time.
So did they have to arrive as bachelors in New Zealand?
10% were bachelors.
Okay.
But the rest found a wife.
Because I remember a lot of, from what I understand, a lot of them were Irish, weren't they?
Correct.
So being Catholics, I would suspect...
63% were Irish, but 63%. It's more than that.
Yep.
Because a lot of the Irish went to England to find work. Because Ireland, remember, we're talking about the Irish potato famine, 1846 to 1851. Now, that is the terrible time
yep.
when the Irish potato famine
hunger.
Really hit,
yep.
particularly 1847.
Yep.
You know, 1 million died. Yep. 3.5 million couldn't pay the rent because the potato crop failed. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to pay the rent.
No.
So the military came in and demolished their houses. So they had to find some way of surviving. So when they saw in the army barracks an advertisement for a free passage for army pensioners
yep.
to go to New Zealand, they could take their wife and their children, provided it wasn't more than 2.
Yep. Okay.
And they would be given a 2-room cottage on arrival. They'd get an acre of land, a quarter of which would be ready for planting mm-hmm. for the crop, you know, summer crops.
Sure.
There'd be a school for their children, a church for their people, both Protestant and Catholic.
Yep.
This was a wonderful way for those people who were dying of hunger in Ireland. Now, the other group that came were the people in the Midlands and England.
Okay.
The Midlands... The Industrial Revolution was really at its highest point.
Are we talking about the East Midlands or a bit further down? Or?
Oh, Central Midlands okay. area, out of Manchester.
Sure.
You know that area.
So a bit around Lancashire and okay.
the average age of death in the Midlands at that time was 17 years of age.
Yeah, it wasn't flash, was it?
And the pollution was terrible. And our army pensioners, many of whom had lost fingers and arms and legs and goodness knows what, had difficulty finding work and accommodation.
Yeah.
So again, they saw the advertisements to coming for this fencible. Fencible means able to defend. Now, from the military point of view, or I should say from the Parliament's point of view, they have to pay the bills, this was a cheaper way of giving New Zealand some military protection. They didn't want to send regular troops because they'd cost more money.
Sure.
So they were a cheap alternative.
And did you get a Dad's Army situation kind of developing?
That's all they were.
That's all they were. Okay.
But after 7 years, and that started from the time they left home in Ireland, Midlands, and got on the ship to come to New Zealand, after 7 years, their term of military service expired. And that's very interesting from any point of view. Suddenly, they stopped grizzling.
Yep.
They stopped complaining. And they got on with life.
Yep.
And you find in the Auckland markets how cheese and butter was the best. They loved it.
Yep.
And they grew potatoes, two crops a year in Howick. And they did well.
Yep. Okay.
They weren't tired out old soldiers.
No. Well, I mean, they were only 40 or so, weren't they? So it weren't too bad, yeah. Well, that's excellent. On the next episode, I just want to just develop more the arrival of the fencibles and their contribution to the creation of Howick as a town and strategic points of interest around the area and stuff like that. So thanks for coming in, Alan, and I hope you join us for episode 2.
We will. Thank you, George.